For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's August 22nd. We are in Malachim Beis. We're in Perek Chaf Dalet, chapter 24. The last thing we spoke about was the kingdom of, or the kingship of Yehoyakim, who was a terrible Rasha, and how he was eventually killed in being given over to Nebuchadnezzar. We said over some of the Gemaras about Yehoyakim and what he did wrong and the various ways that he was punished. There's another detail which we have to speak about this evening. And he was succeeded by his son, Yehoyachin, which we'll read about. Just a few psukim, we'll read about that. But the bulk of tonight's shir is going to be about Nebuchadnezzar, to give a little bit of an understanding of Nebuchadnezzar, who will eventually destroy the first Beis HaMikdash. We've talked about him before. We especially spoke about him when we learned Sefer Daniel, because there he is front and center for the first half of the Sefer. But we're going to talk about him now in the context of destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Yehoyakim, as we mentioned, was a terrible Rasha. When he was, he ruled for 11 years, and at a certain point Nebuchadnezzar conquered him, as we learned, and then he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. And then Nebuchadnezzar came back to Yerushalayim to punish Yehoyakim. So this was as we mentioned, Nebuchadnezzar ended up coming to Yerushalayim four times. The first time was when he conquered Yehoyakim. That was the first time he came to Yerushalayim. That was in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. That's when he conquered Yehoyakim. But he did not exile anybody. He didn't even depose Yehoyakim. He left him as king. But he made him pay tribute and just be a puppet king for him. Yehoyakim remained that way for 3 years, but then he rebelled for 3 years. So at that point, then Nebuchadnezzar came back, and I don't know if it was a war or whatever it is, but he reconquered Yerushalayim, or came back and reasserted himself, and this time he demanded Yehoyakim to come with him. Now, what I didn't mention to you last time is that Yehoyakim was behind the wall of Yerushalayim. He didn't want to come out. And he was prepared to fight with Nebuchadnezzar, which would have been suicidal. The Sanhedrin came to Nebuchadnezzar. And they asked Nebuchadnezzar, "What do you want? You know, we're prepared to serve you. We're not here. We're not interested in a fight. What do you want?" So he said, "Yehoyakim rebelled against me. I want you to, if you give me over Yehoyakim, then I will leave you alone." So they went to Yehoyakim. They told him that Nebuchadnezzar wants to take you, and then he'll leave the rest of us alone. Yehoyakim refused to go. Now here you enter the classic shaila of that the Goyim surround the Jewish city. They demand a specific person. So then, and if they say, "If you don't give us that person, we'll destroy the city." So what is the halacha over there? We've talked about this before, actually. We had it with Sheva ben Bichri back in Sefer Shmuel. So what does one do in that situation? So it depends. The first thing it depends on is whether the person who they want is willing to give himself up. If he's willing to give himself up, it is a mitzvah for him to give himself up in order to save everybody else. He's not necessarily required to give himself up, but if he does so, it is a mitzvah. It's not considered committing suicide. It's considered saving the rest of Klal Yisrael. It's a very big mitzvah to do that. But in the event he does not want to give himself up, which is what we're dealing with over here, what is the halacha? So it depends whether the person is anyway Chayav Misa or not. If the person who they are demanding is a person who is anyway really supposed to be executed, meaning the person has committed averos for which really he should be executed, but for whatever reason we're unable to execute him, then it is permitted to give him over to the non-Jews. If it is a person who is not anyway chayev misa. There's no reason why he's liable for death. Then we are prohibited from giving him over, even if it means the entire city will be destroyed and killed. We're not allowed to give over a single Jew to the non-Jews. In this case, Jehoiakim was a terrible Rasha, and he deserved to be killed many times over. He did so many averos, terrible averos, that it was obvious that it was permitted to give him over. He refused to go to Nebuchadnezzar, so the Sanhedrin, I assume it was those who worked for the Sanhedrin, there was probably some sort of a scuffle or whatever it is, but they took Jehoiakim and they lowered him over the wall to Nebuchadnezzar. And Jehoiakim ended up dying on the road, and we learned about last time that Nebuchadnezzar fed his flesh to the dogs. The Nebuchadnezzar put in place of Jehoiakim as king Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin or Yechanya, same person. Yechanya, Jehoiachin, same person. So, remember Jehoiakim was the son of Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu was the great tzaddik. And Yoshiyahu had three sons. Jehoahaz was the second son who became king upon Yoshiyahu's death. But Jehoahaz was killed in short order, within 3 months, by Paro Necho. And Jehoiakim, who was the oldest son, became king for 11 years. Now, with Jehoiakim's death, the Nebuchadnezzar puts, he has a choice here. He could put Jehoiakim's son in power, or he could put Jehoiakim's third brother in power. He puts Jehoiakim's son, Yechanya, in power. Now, in Perek Chaf Dalet, chapter 24, we pick up the story. We're going to read a few psukim here. We'll start with Pasuk Vav, verse 6, in Perek Chaf Dalet, chapter 24. The pasuk says, Vayishkav Jehoiakim v'avosav, Jehoiakim died. Vayimloch Jehoiachin b'no tachtav, so Jehoiachin, his son, became king in his stead. The king of Mitzrayim no longer came from his land, meaning he was no longer available to help the Jews fight with Bavel. Because the king of Bavel had conquered the land from the river of Mitzrayim until the river of the Euphrates. All that had originally belonged to the king of Mitzrayim, meaning the king of Bavel had essentially subdued the king of Mitzrayim. This is mentioned in the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu. In the book of Yirmiyahu, this is mentioned that the king of Bavel, meaning Nebuchadnezzar, defeated Paro in a war. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Ben Shmoneh Esrei Shana Jehoiachin B'malcho. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he became king. Ushlosha Chadashe Malach B'Yerushalayim. He only ruled for 3 months. V'shem Imo, the name of his mother, was Nechushta Vas El Nasan B'Yerushalayim. Nechushta, the daughter of El Nasan from Yerushalayim. Now we've talked about before that the mother of the king is significant because the line of David HaMelech goes of Mashiach, goes from David HaMelech down through the kings. So it's important to know who the mother is, because that ensures the integrity of the line of David HaMelech. If the mother is a woman that a king is not allowed to marry, then that ruins the line of David HaMelech. So it's important to know who the mother is. So by pointing out to us the mother of Jehoiachin, then we should already realize that it is likely that the line of Mashiach is going to go through Jehoiachin, which it does, as we'll talk about when we discuss Jehoiachin a little bit more in depth. We'll get to it hopefully tonight. So Jehoiachin becomes king. Pasuk Tes, verse 9, Vayas HaRabbeinei Hashem. He did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Kechol Asher Asa Aviv, like everything his father did. So he was evil. Bo'esahi, at that time, Alu Avdei Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Yerushalayim. So the servants of Nebuchadnezzar came up to Yerushalayim. Vatavo Ha'ir Ba'matzar, and the city was put under siege. Vayavo Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Alo'ir. Nebuchadnezzar came above all, came against the city. Vavadav Torim Aleo, and his servants were besieging the city. Now the same thing happened. Nebuchadnezzar came to the city and laid siege to the city, and again the Sanhedrin came to Nebuchadnezzar and said to him, "We're not interested in fighting with you. What do you want?" Now, Yoyachin was made the king by Nebuchadnezzar, and it's only 3 months later. Like, what's going on over here? So the Medrash tells us what happened is Nebuchadnezzar successfully defeated Yehoiakim after a 3-year siege. I'm sorry, not 3 years, excuse me, after he had rebelled for 3 years. He successfully defeated Yehoiakim. Then he put Yehoiakim in place. He turned around and went back to Bavel. When he got to Bavel, his advisors said to him, "So what happened?" So he said, "Well, I killed Yehoiakim, and now Yehoiakim, I put him as king." So they said to him, "They say a mashal that from a bad dog, you can't raise a good dog." In other words, you just put the king who rebelled against you, you put his son in power. What do you think is going to happen? So Nebuchadnezzar said, "Oh, that's a good point." So he turned around, went back to Yerushalayim, and again laid siege to Yerushalayim. And again the Sanhedrin came and said, "What do you want? We're not here to fight with you." And he said, "I want Yehoiachin." So this time, look at the next passage, Gibeiz, verse 12, Yehoiachin did not resist. Vayetze Yehoiachin melech Yehuda melech Bavel. The king Yehoiachin went out to the king of Bavel, or on the king of Bavel. This is not to fight. He's coming out to allow the king of Bavel to do to him as he wishes. Hu v'imo, he and his mother, v'avadav, v'sarav, v'sarisav, his servants, his officers, his attendants. Vayikach oso melech Bavel, the king of Bavel took him, bishnas shmona lemolcho, in the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's kingship. That means that's not the 8th year of Yehoiachin, he only ruled for 3 months. It's the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar. We'll talk about the years of Nebuchadnezzar presently. Vayotzei misham, and he, Nebuchadnezzar, took it out from there, as kol otzros beis Hashem, all of the treasure houses of the house of Hashem, va'otzros beis HaMelech, and the treasure houses of the palace, vayikatzitz es kol klei hazav asher asa Shlomo Melech Yisrael be'echal Hashem, and he cut down all of the golden vessels that Shlomo HaMelech had made in the Beis HaMikdash, kasha dibar Hashem, like Hashem had said. This was to fulfill the prophecy that Yeshayahu had told Chizkiyahu, that because Chizkiyahu showed everything to the king of Bavel, and those days the king of Bavel was a weak king, that was Meroidach Biladon ben Biladon, who had been so impressed with the fact that the sun went backwards, you recall, so he came to meet Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu showed him around, which was the wrong thing to do. And the nevuah was that because he showed him around, then everything will end up in Bavel. And that's what happens here. V'higla es kol Yerushalayim, and he exiled all of Yerushalayim, as we'll see, it does not mean all the people. V'es kol hasarim, all the officers. V'es kol kibori hachayel, and all of the soldiers. Aseres alafim golet, 10,000 people going into Golus. So 10,000 is a lot of people, but it's not the whole nation. V'chol hecharosh v'hamasker. Now this is the first time we have this phrase. This is a very, very important phrase. And he took all of the charosh v'hamasker. Literal translation of charosh v'hamasker. Charosh means carpenters, literally. And masker is another type of craftsman. The simple meaning is it's the skilled craftsman. That's the simple meaning. Lo nishar zulas dalas am haaretz. There was nobody left except for the lowly, the unskilled am haaretz, the people of the land. So he left those behind, people who were unlikely to be able to mount a rebellion because they lacked leadership. The Gemara tells us who are the Charash v'Hamasker. The Charash and the Masker were all of the Talmidei Chachamim. Nebuchadnezzar recognized that the Bnei Yisrael are led by Talmidei Chachamim, and that's what provides leadership, effective leadership for the Jewish people. And he took all of the Charash v'Hamasker, all of the leaders of Klal Yisrael, meaning all of the Talmidei Chachamim. He took them to Bavel with Yechaniah. That's why we, as I've mentioned to you before, that's why it says in the Megillah, in Megillah's Esther, after we mention Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan HaBiro, we mention Mordechai, and we all say that pasuk out loud. That's the first pasuk we say all out loud in the Megillah. But then the very next pasuk is read by the Baal Kriya with the Eicha tune, and he says, "Asher haglam Yerushalayim," that he, Mordechai, had gone into Galus from Yerushalayim, im hagola, with the exile, asher im hagola, asher haglasa, that had gone into exile, im Yechanya melech Yehuda, with Yechanya, the king of Yehuda. Mordechai is one of the Charash v'Hamasker. He was one of the leaders. We know Mordechai was a leader. We see that in Megillas Esther. Taking a man like Mordechai and those like him out of Yerushalayim removed leadership from the Jewish people. We were left with no effective leadership other than the king who he is going to put in place. The one major exception was Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was in Yerushalayim and remained there until the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But everybody else, Mordechai, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Yechezkel, all of those people and those like them were taken to Bavel at this time. They are called the Charash v'Hamasker. Vayegel es Yehoyachin Bavela, he took Yehoyachin into Galus to Bavel. Ves, and we repeat over here, as Ema Melech, the mother of the king, Ves Neshea Melech, the wives of the king, Ves Sarisav, and his officers, Ves Eile Haaretz, and the leaders of the nation, Holich Gola Mirushalayim Bavela, he led into Galus from Yerushalayim to Bavel. Ve'es kol anshei hachayel, and all of the soldiers, shimas alachim, 7,000. The Gemara points out that if originally it said 10,000, here it says 7,000. That's because 3,000 were from Yehuda, and the rest of the 7,000 were everybody else. Binyamin and the other shvatim that were there amounted to 7,000, but 3,000 were from Yehuda. Ve'acharash ve'hamasker elef, how much charash hamasker, how much tamani tamani chacham, 1,000. Tamini Chachamim, just think about that. To skim off the top, the 1,000 Tamini Chachamim who would have led the Jewish people. Hakol Giborim, all of them warriors. Warriors here does not have to mean physical warriors, although it does mean that as well, but it also means warriors in Torah. Osim Alchama, those who wage war. Vayivayim Melech Bavel Gola Bavela, the king of Bavel took them into Golas to Bavel. Now, who did he put in place? Vayamlech Melech Bavel es Matanya Dodo Tachtav, and the king of Bavel crowned as king Matanya his uncle, Yechanya's uncle, that would be Yehoyakim's brother. This is the third son of Yoshiyahu. He made him king in his place. Vayasev es Shemot Tzidkiyahu, he changed his name to Tzidkiyahu. That was a common thing to change the name of the king when he became king, because it was a sign of respect that to change his name so people wouldn't call him what they used to call him. It was a way of demanding respect for him. So that brings us to the last king of Yerushalayim, which is Tzidkiyahu. We're going to pause here. Well, I guess let's read till the end of the pasuk, the end of the parak. Even though it's going to need some explanation, let's read a little further. Ben Esrim ba'achas shana Tzidkiyahu v'malcho, when Tzidkiyahu became king, he was 21 years old. V'achas esrei shana malach b'Yerushalayim, he ruled in Yerushalayim for 11 years. V'shem Imo, the name of his mother was Chamutal bas Yirmiyahu mi'Livna, Chamutal daughter of Yirmiyahu from Livna, which means he was a full brother of Yehoachaz, did I get that right? He was the full brother of... Yes, of the oldest brother of Yehoachaz, but he was a half-brother of Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim had a different mother. Vayas harab eini Hashem, he did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem, kechol asher asa Yehoyakim, like everything Yehoyakim did. Now, the Gemara tells us Tzidkiyahu was a tzaddik. So this pasuk therefore needs explanation, which we will get to hopefully presently. I guess I have to explain now in order to understand the next pasuk. Yeah. So what this means is, what did he do evil in the eyes of Hashem? He didn't listen to Yirmiyahu, and he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. That's what it means, kehol asher asa Yehoyakim. He did what Yehoyakim did. Just like Yehoyakim ended up rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar, so did Tzidkiyahu end up rebelling against Nebuchadnezzar. In the end of those 11 years, he rebels against Nebuchadnezzar. We'll have to talk about that. I don't know if we're going to get to tonight the nature of his rebellion. A very interesting story of Tzidkiyahu's rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. But the Gemara tells us that Jehoiakim was a terrible Rasha, so bad that Hashem wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael because of Jehoiakim, but he ended up having Rachmanis, mercy, because of the people, because the people were tzaddikim. In the days of Tzidkiyahu, the Gemara says, the people were so bad, Hashem wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael because of the people, but he had Rachmanis, he had mercy, because of the righteousness of Tzidkiyahu, because he was a tzaddik. So when it says he did evil over here, it doesn't mean that he was an evil king, it means he did one thing wrong, which is he didn't listen to Yirmiyahu. Now, he didn't listen to Yirmiyahu in that he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Pasuk Chaf says, as a mitigating factor, why did he rebel against Nebuchadnezzar? Ki al af Hashem ayisav Yerushalayim uv Yehuda, because of the anger of Hashem against Yehuda and Yerushalayim, that the way Rashi explains it is, Hashem wanted Tzidkiyahu to rebel so that Nebuchadnezzar would destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Ad hishlicho osam al panav, until Hashem threw them, Klal Yisrael, off his face, meaning he sent Klal Yisrael away. Vayimrod Tzidkiyahu b'melech Bavel, the king of Tzidkiyahu rebelled against the king of Bavel, which leads us into the next parak, which is the rebellion and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it does not totally absolve Tzidkiyahu. If it was that Tzidkiyahu had no choice but to rebel, the pasuk would not have said he did evil. Can't say he did evil if he was forced into doing it. So clearly, the Navi is holding Tzidkiyahu responsible on some level, but the Gemara says emphatically he was a tzaddik. In fact, we have a story that takes place between Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar, where Hashem miraculously saves Tzidkiyahu from Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll see in a moment, because of the righteousness of Tzidkiyahu. So he was a tzaddik, but he did do something wrong on some level. I guess it means on his level he did something wrong and that he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar without not listening to Yirmiyahu. Yeah.
What puzzles me is, if Nebuchadnezzar is the one that's making someone king, why doesn't he make his own people king? Why is he choosing
So the common practice was to take someone from within the conquered nation, because they know the score, they know the people, they know the players. And it's very difficult for an outsider to come in and then he can rule by force, an outsider can. But an insider can get the people, can mollify the people, explain to the people, listen, it's better if we just behave, that kind of thing. That's also why, as we'll see, after the destruction, he puts Gedaliah ben Achikom in charge. Gedaliah was also an insider. He wasn't from the David HaMelech, but he was a Jew. He didn't take a non-Jew and put them on top of the Jews that were left in Eretz Yisrael. For the same reason. Because it just helps things run relatively smoothly.
I have a question a little further back. Why would we have expected that Mitzrayim would have...
Because they were helping out.
They were helping.
Yeah, remember, Yoshiyahu was killed by Paro Nachal.
Right.
So the Mitzrayim had been the strongest power in the region.
But why would they have...
Not out of love for the Jews.
Right, I'm saying
because,
that's what I'm asking.
Because they wanted to, they were in a power struggle with Bavel.
Uh-huh.
So it's, if Bavel is attacking you, it's to your advantage that...
They don't like him either.
Right. Okay. The enemy of your enemy is my friend. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. So we now have Tzidkiyahu in place. So again, we'll talk about that in a moment. But let's understand Nebuchadnezzar over here. Now, Jehoiachin went along with Nebuchadnezzar. He went, I wouldn't call it willingly, but he didn't put up a fight. Jehoiachin was no tzaddik. He was a Rasha. And he was taken to Bavel, and he was put in jail. Jail in Bavel is not bars. Jail in Bavel was a deep pit in the ground with barely enough room to walk around. A tiny pit in the ground, barely any light, and that's it. That's where he is. Jehoiachin remained there for 37 years.
Wow.
He will outlive Nebuchadnezzar, and when Nebuchadnezzar's son Evel Merudach becomes king, he will take Jehoiachin out of the pit. But that's where he is for 37 years. We need to discuss. I just don't want to forget to do it. I don't. It's jumping the gun to do it now. But we will need to discuss how the line of David HaMelech continues despite Jehoiachin being in this pit for 37 years. Well, hopefully we'll get to that. I have to remember to do that. Okay. Now, the Gemara tells us Nebuchadnezzar. We encountered Nebuchadnezzar before. We mentioned earlier that Nebuchadnezzar was a foot soldier in the great huge army of Sanherib back in the day of Chizkiyahu. And he witnessed the destruction, the total destruction of Sanherib's army. Over a million people killed suddenly one night by Gavriel HaMalach. He witnessed it, Nebuchadnezzar did. And he was one of the survivors. And Nebuchadnezzar was in Bavel. Nebuchadnezzar was the scribe of Meroidach Bil-Adon ben Bil-Adon, that king that was so impressed with the sun going backwards. He was the scribe for that king. Now in those days, Bavel was not a powerful country. It was actually a very weak country. And he was the scribe for Meroidach Bil-Adon ben Bil-Adon. When the sun went backwards and Meroidach was so impressed, so he wanted to send a letter to Chizkiyahu to ask if he could come meet him. So he wrote a letter and it said, to the great King Chizkiyahu and to the great nation Yisrael and to the great God of the Jews. That was the way he wrote the letter. Well, he wanted to write a letter. So Nebuchadnezzar said, you can't write a letter like that. You have to put Hashem first. So Nebuchadnezzar was not present when that letter was written. Even though he was the chief scribe or the scribe, he wasn't present at that time. And the letter had been written without him. Gemara tells us when he found out the order of how it was written and that Hashem was put after Chizkiyahu and Klal Yisrael, then Hashem, and he wasn't put first, Nebuchadnezzar attempted to run after the messenger to stop him and rewrite it, to put the great Adon, the Eloka, the great God of the Jews, first. The Gemara tells us that he ran four steps and then the Malach stopped him. The reason the Malach stopped him was because had he gone and actually managed to stop that messenger and rewrite it, the zechus, the merit of Nebuchadnezzar would have been so great that he would have been able to destroy the Jewish people. He would have had so much merit for that act of standing up for the honor of Hashem that he would have had so much merit that he would have been able to destroy the Jewish people. And therefore, the Malach, Hashem sent the Malach to stop him to limit his merit. Why? What do you mean? I mean, here he wants to do a good thing. First of all, just because a person wants to do a good thing is not necessarily a reason why he's going to get it. You know, we're about to start with Avinu Malkeinu, where we're headed towards Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. One of the things we say is, Avinu Malkeinu, we say, Kasveinu b'sefer hazichuyos. Write us in the book of merit. When you write us in the book of merit, if you do mitzvos, you get merit. When you write that means give us the opportunity to do mitzvos. Just because a person wants to do good doesn't necessarily mean they will have the opportunity. A person has to have the siyata, the shmaya, has to have the divine help to be able to do mitzvos. That's why the Gemara tells us, mitzvah bal yadcha al tachmitzena, a mitzvah that comes to your hand, don't let it become chavetz. Don't delay. Do it right away because you don't know how long the opportunity will be there. Grab it when you can. So Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do this and the Malach stopped him. He wasn't given the opportunity. Now, you could argue, what did he do wrong? Nebuchadnezzar was destined to do terrible things wrong. Nebuchadnezzar is a terrible, terrible Rasha. The Gemara tells us, the halacha is, if you see the house of Nebuchadnezzar, in its destruction, I don't know if we know where it is today in Iraq, but if a person sees the house of Nebuchadnezzar, one is supposed to say Baruch Shem, what's the Lashon? You're supposed to say Baruch Atah Hashem, you know, you're supposed to say Bless Hashem, I think it says Shecharav Beiso Shel Oso Rasha. I think it's the Lashon of the language of the Bracha. That you destroy the house of this terrible Rasha. You're not supposed to, Nebuchadnezzar was a terrible person. But at that moment, he wanted to do something good.
Didn't you say when he went to hell, everybody was afraid?
Yeah, yeah. He was a terrible person. He was a terrible, terrible person. We're going to learn more about him. But he did want to do something good. So the Malach prevented him. Hashem didn't want him to get so much merit. But just to show you that that he did have some respect for Hashem, at least at that time. Now, Bavel was, as I mentioned, a very weak country. Nebuchadnezzar becomes king. In his first year of becoming king, he conquers Nineveh. Nineveh was the capital of Ashur. Ashur, Assyria, was at that time the most powerful country in that area near Bavel. Paro in Mitzrayim was also very powerful, but Mitzrayim was further away. In the immediate region of Bavel, the most powerful nation was Ashur, and he conquered Nineveh, which consolidated his power. The second year of Nebuchadnezzar is when he conquered Yerushalayim for the first time. That was the first time he conquered Jehoiakim and did not take anybody into Golus and did not depose him, as I said before. We know, as I mentioned, that Jehoiakim eventually rebelled and Nebuchadnezzar came back, and this time Jehoiakim is killed. Yechoniah is put in place, but then Nebuchadnezzar goes back home and they tell him, how could you put the son of the rebellious person in place? He comes back. So now in the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar, he takes Jehoiachin into Golus. So this is the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. He takes Jehoiachin into Golus. That's the first Golus. 11 years later, which is the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, that is when he will destroy the Beis HaMikdash. That's when he will conquer Tzidkiyahu and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara, the way the Gemara says it is that the Jews were, it says the language is Galu b'sheva, Galu b'shmona. They went into Galus in the seventh year. They went into Galus in the eighth year. Galu b'shmona esrei, Galu b'tisha esrei. They went into Galus in the 18th year and in the 19th year. What that means is the first Galus that we went into, meaning it was two different exiles, the same Beis HaMikdash. Not, we're not talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, but we know there were two stages of the Golus. The first one took place in the seventh year of the conquest of Jehoiakim, which is the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar. And the destruction of Beis HaMikdash took place in the 18th year of the conquest of Jehoiakim, which is the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is 1 year prior to the first conquest of Jehoiakim. That's the way the Gemara says it. Now, the reason why this is very important is because we are going to get to, we discussed this when we learned Sefer Daniel especially, but we're going to get to the all-important count of the 70 years of Golus of Bavel. That is very significantly linked to these years I'm telling you about now. The years of Nebuchadnezzar, the years of the Golus, the year of the Golus of Jehoiachin, the year of the Golus of Tzidkiyahu. We're going to discuss this, how various kings made these counts and made mistakes. The primary mistake they made was counting from the wrong time. They picked the wrong time to count from, which we're going to discuss presently. But that's the story of that. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was, as I said, a terrible king, terrible, terrible person. When he conquered various kings, as he conquered, the Gemara says that eventually he was Malach Bekipa. He's one of the few kings who ruled over the entire known world. Kipa meaning a kipa, like a dome. He ruled over the entire dome of the world, meaning the entire known world. He had conquered everybody. Remember, that does not mean that he annexed the whole world. It just means that everything was under his control, which means that no one was able to say no to Nebuchadnezzar. They were scared of him, everybody. So the Gemara tells us that the way that he asserted himself over the kings that he conquered, he didn't necessarily put them in jail, he didn't necessarily kill them, very often he kept them in place, but he would have every so often various feasts in Bavel, and the kings would be forced to come to that feast and pay homage to Nebuchadnezzar. And what he would do is he would work with some sort of a lottery system, and he would just go around, and his way of asserting himself was to molest each of the kings. That's what he would do to them. So the Gemara tells us that when it was Tzidkiyahu's turn that his name came up and Nebuchadnezzar was going to molest him, Hashem intervened and physically prevented Nebuchadnezzar from doing that to the Tzaddik Tzidkiyahu. Just to show you the merit of Tzidkiyahu, that Hashem did not allow that to happen to him. Hashem likely would not have protected Yechaniah or any of the other, or Yehoyakim or anything like that. But Tzidkiyahu was a tzaddik, and Hashem protected him from Nebuchadnezzar's depraved behavior. But that was what, that's the way he asserted himself and showed that he was in charge and he was the king. Now, the Yechaniah, as we mentioned before, was put into this deep pit in the ground. And that's where he remained for 37 years. From the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar, which is when the Golos of Yehoyachin happened, until Nebuchadnezzar's death, Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. So it was 37 years before Yehoyachin came out of the pit. When he was in the pit, so the Sanhedrin were also taken into Golos with Yehoyachin, because all of the Cheresh v'Hamasker were taken, all the leadership of the Jewish people were taken to Bavel, and since they were taken to Bavel, they were worried. They said, here, Yehoyachin, who is in the line of David HaMelech, is in the pit, he has no descendants, he has no access to his wife, and what's going to be with the future of the line of David HaMelech? How could we allow that to be to end? So they said, we have to come up with a plan. So they said, this is what we're going to do. We are going to appeal to the Omenes. The Omenes means the nanny, the woman who cares for the children of the queen of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar likely had many wives, but I guess this would be the main wife, the queen. So we're going to appeal to the Omenes, to the nanny. She will then appeal to the queen, and then the queen will appeal to the king. That's the way the Medrash says it. It was likely more steps than that. It is unlikely that they were within 3 degrees of the king. It probably took more than that, but you see what they were trying to do. They were going to start with someone low on the totem pole who they knew could eventually, through different channels, get access to the next person, next person, next person, finally up to the king. So they finally did get access to the queen. The queen was sympathetic to the situation. And then the Gemara tells us that when Nebuchadnezzar was interested in extending his own line, the queen said to him, what about Yechaniah? What about him? That he shouldn't have his line extended? So she convinced the king, Nebuchadnezzar, to allow Yechaniah's wife to join him in that pit. And they lowered her down into the pit. That's what the Gemara tells us. Now, that was not a pleasant place to be, but they put her down there. Now, remember that Yechaniah was there by himself. It is unlikely that he was being fed well. It's unlikely. I mean, he was in a very bad place. People, when they're in that situation, are not interested in physical relationships. That's not on people's minds when they're in a very dire situation. That's not what people are thinking about. But it was very important to Yechaniah to continue the line of David HaMelech. He knew that he came. I mean, he was the heir to Mashiach, and how's he going to do that? How can he continue the line to go? So when his wife was lowered down to join him, so now he knew that this opportunity was not going to last, and he was very important. But then she said to him that I have become a nida. So the Gemara tells us that the Medrash says immediately Yechaniah removed himself from her. He did not go near her and stayed away. So the Gemara says they took her out of there and she counted her days and she went to the mikvah and then she went back. The Gemara tells us that Hashem said, when you were king, you were a terrible Rasha. You didn't keep Taharas HaMishpacha or anything else for that matter. You worshipped Avodah Zarah. You did all terrible things. Now, you did the right thing. Because of that, I will make sure that you will be Zocha, you'll merit, that Mashiach will come from you. And because of that act of Taharas HaMishpacha, because of that, the line of David Melech continues. So it's an important thing. It's something which I don't know how well known that story is, but it's a.
Do we know the name of the wife who's the Sedekus?
We might know. I don't know offhand. We might know. That's going to depend. Well, I'll tell you what happened there. But it's just to emphasize that it is through Taharas HaMishpacha that Mashiach will eventually be born. If it wasn't for Taharas HaMishpacha, we may not have Mashiach. So that's a very, very important thing to know. Now, the Gemara tells us the pit was so narrow they could not lie down. There was no room to lie down. The Gemara says that it is... You know, I would say he must have, you know, whatever it is. You know, it was a very uncomfortable place to be, right? So the Gemara tells us that it is extremely difficult for a woman to conceive if she cannot lie down. And the Gemara says that Hashem made an ace that she would be able to conceive. Who did she conceive? She conceived the person Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is a contraction of Zerubbabel, which means sown in Bavel, which means to grow in Bavel, because that's where he was conceived and born, Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is the same person as Nehemiah, as in Ezra Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was born from Yechaniah in the pit with his wife after keeping Taharas HaMishpacha. That's Nehemiah, that's where he is. He wasn't born in the pit, but he was conceived in that. And from there comes the line of Malchus Beis David. The line of Mashiach continues with him. So, in answer to your question of how do we know the line, the mother's name, that would be in Nehemiah, would be to look over there and see what the mother's name is. I don't recall if it says her name there, but we can try to research that. Okay, so that is what the Sanhedrin, that was their efforts to make sure that the line of David is not lost. Now, the line of David could have gone through Tzidkiyahu, because he's the uncle of Yechaniah, which means he's the son of Yoshio HaMelech, so he also comes from David HaMelech. It could have come from him. But we're going to see later that all of Tzidkiyahu's descendants were killed. And there was no way for the line to come from Tzidkiyahu. It had to come from Yechaniah. He was the only one left through whom the line could continue. Tzidkiyahu, when he became king, Nebuchadnezzar made him take an oath that he would not rebel against him. And Tzidkiyahu took that oath. In one of his in one of his as I mentioned to you, Nebuchadnezzar demanded that the kings of the various countries that were under his control, they needed to come visit in Babel every so often. Again, where he would take advantage of them. But they would interact with him at that time. And at one point, Tzidkiyahu was in Babel, and he was there with Nebuchadnezzar, and he walked into Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar was eating a rabbit, a live rabbit. Oh. And Tzidkiyahu witnessed Nebuchadnezzar eating a live rabbit. So that's fairly disgusting for anybody. So when Nebuchadnezzar saw that Tzidkiyahu saw him eating a live rabbit, he realized that if Tzidkiyahu would repeat this, people would degrade Nebuchadnezzar for good reason. So he made Tzidkiyahu swear that he would not reveal that he had what he had seen Nebuchadnezzar do. So this was another oath that Tzidkiyahu had taken with Nebuchadnezzar. Eventually, Tzidkiyahu, this is when it says that he rebelled, what he did is he told about the eating of the live rabbit. That's what he did. He told about that, and that led to his rebelling completely, because once he broke one shua, then the other one. Now, once Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll learn, once he conquers Tzidkiyahu, it's going to be the next parak, which we'll get to in Mirz Hashem next week, but once he conquers Tzidkiyahu, he comes to the Sanhedrin, and he says to the Sanhedrin, now remember, he's interacted with the Sanhedrin several times already, with Yehoyakim, with Yehoyachin, with the wife of Yehoyachin. I mean, he has to do with the Sanhedrin. So he says to the Sanhedrin, do you see what he did? He broke the oath. How could he do that? So they said to him, so he asked them, is there any way that it's permitted for a Jew to violate an oath? They said, well, he could go to a chacham, to a Talmud chacham, to a Torah scholar, and get the oath annulled. So he said, oh, well, did he do that? And it came out that he did do that. He didn't just violate the oath, he did. Who did he go to? The Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin annulled his oath for him. So that caused Nebuchadnezzar to become very angry with the Sanhedrin, and he punished the Sanhedrin for having annulled the oath of Tzidkiyahu. But it is through that the breaking of that oath that Nebuchadnezzar now comes to Yerushalayim, and that's what we're going to read about in the next perek, in chapter 25, perek Chaf Hei, about the rebellion of Tzidkiyahu. Of course, he is going to lose in his rebellion, and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash itself.
If all the Talmud Chachamim were sent to Babel, how did they have a Sanhedrin?
He came to Babel too. Tzidkiyahu had been coming to Babel. I'm not sure where he got his oath and all, but he would have been coming to Babel also. Like, you know, there was regular...
So we don't know where the Sanhedrin was.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know where that happened. That story, I don't know where that took place.
Do we know why Nebuchadnezzar and his wife would care that Yechaniah would have a descendant? Like, why were they being nice?
Right. So that's a good question. I assume that they appeal to a king can understand what it means not to have a descendant. If you're going to kill him, kill him. But if you're not going to kill him, you understand how much he wants to have a descendant. Right. So for really the question is, why didn't he kill Yechaniah? And I think you have to say that Hashem put it in his head not to kill him. Because really the natural thing to do is if you're either put him in place as king or kill him. But to leave him alive, what do you gain by that? You know, what's the point? So maybe it was just to show that he subjugated. I don't know. But that's that. Okay. Now, let me just make sure I didn't miss anything over here in Divrei Hayamim. I was following the story here as well. There's more detail in Divrei Hayamim, as always. There's more detail here, but I think we covered most of what's here. Okay. Now, next week. Oh, I do want to mention one thing very quickly. We have a couple more minutes. Just one thing very quickly. The taking of the Cheresh and Masker to Bavel 11 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that all the Chachamim went, looked like a terrible thing. It left the Jews leaderless other than Sidkiyahu and Yirmiyahu. However, it turned out to be a tremendous chesed, because when he took 1,000 Talmidei Chachamim and brought them to Bavel, then what did they do in Bavel? They set up Jewish infrastructure in Bavel. Bavel was not a place for a good Jewish boy or girl. That wasn't a place for Jews. It was a hedonistic. It wasn't a place for Jews to be. But they came to Bavel first, and they established Jewish infrastructure. They built mikvahs. They built shuls. They built yeshivas. They opened up kosher restaurants. Mm-hmm. Right? They did what had shechita, everything that you need. A Jewish community infrastructure is a lot of stuff that we need, and they put it together so that that 11 years later, when the rank and file of Jews came to Bavel, they didn't come to a place that was unfriendly. I don't mean friendly in terms of anti-Semitism. I mean that culture, right? A place that wasn't conducive to being Jewish, to being religious. Where they came to a place that was able to sustain a religious community. So that ended up being a big chesed that Hashem did to take them into Galus 11 years earlier to set it up. That did not happen in the United States of America. The United States, I believe, is the first Galus that we came to where the first waves of Jews to come were the rank and file and not the Talmidei Chachamim. In all other places that we went, Europe, etc., we were either preceded by or at least led by the Talmidei Chachamim coming to that Galus. America was not the case. I always argue that is the one feather in our cap. When you say that, how can you know people before us were so much better? Which is true. We are still nowhere near where people were in Europe in their great Avodas Hashem. But what we have that no one else had is that we were really, really starting from nothing. Really from nothing. And we lost millions of Jews to assimilation because we had nothing. And we're working backwards. Even today we're still working backwards. So that's the difference.
Even the rabbis in Poland and other places did not want to send.
That's the reason.
It was called the Treif in Medina.
Right, for that reason.
Assimilate. And even then Jews who came were forced to work on Shabbos.
It was a very, very difficult thing.
It was very, very terrible.
Okay, so We're going to attempt next time to finish Melachim. I don't know if we will or won't. It's a pretty long parak. But we'll give it a shot. I don't know if we'll finish or not. Also, there's a lot to talk about, so we'll see.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.